You're listening to Weird Medicine with Dr. Steve on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve. Dr. Steve!
It's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. I'm Dr. Steve with my little pal, Dr. Scott, the traditional Chinese medical practitioner who keeps the alternative medicine wackos at bay. Hello, Dr. Scott.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
And she who will do most anything for a glass of expensive wine, it's Lady Diagnosis.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
And he who will supply her with said wine, Dr. X.
Hey, Steve.
Hello, Dr. X. This is a show for people who would never listen to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you've got a question, you're embarrassed to take your regular medical provider. If you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call at 347-766-4323. That's 347-2HIT. If you're listening to us live, the number is 754-227-3647. That's 754-BARE-NIP. Very good. That's my favorite. Also, 754-22-PENIS.
That's my favorite.
Follow us on Twitter at Weird Medicine, at Lady Diagnosis, or at Dr. Scott WM. Visit our website at drsteve.com for podcast, medical news, and stuff you can buy. Or go to our merchandise store at cafepress.com/weirdmedicine. Most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything you hear with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on this show without talking it over with your doctor, nurse practitioner, physician assistant, pharmacist, chiropractor, acupuncturist, yoga master, physical therapist, clinical laboratory scientist, or whatever. All right, very good. So, we haven't done this in a while. With all of us.
Do we need to reintroduce everyone?
I don't know. It hadn't quite been that long, but it has been a long time. Lady Diagnosis hasn't seen the new studio. It's not complete. This is sort of phase one of the new studio.
I like.
But after I decided I'm not going to pull the plug on the show, I figured, you know, we needed an upgrade. Our old table was a piece of crap. Sensei AJ helped me put that together a million years ago. It was just plastic, and we had wood screws in the plastic, and the stupid boom mics would pull out, and in the middle of the show, it was awful. So this is just a much better situation. Now we're closer together, too. It's slightly more intimate.
Mm.
Speaking of intimate, if you want to buy the womanizer, you can get one at stuff.drsteve.com. This is the adult toy that we talked about that one of our listeners turned us on to, and it's quite outstanding. And I've never seen one anywhere other than on, you know, talking about it on this show or at stuff.drsteve.com. You got to scroll all the way to the bottom because I got to put all the, you know, the adult stuff as far away from the top of the page as I can.
And what was it?
It's called a womanizer.
I know, but what was it? What did it do?
It does pulses of air.
That's right.
Yeah, and you don't have to touch anybody with it. You just get it close to you, and it drives you crazy. And if you want to listen to music while you're, turning your woman on with the womanizer, go to tweakedaudio.com, offer code FLUID for the best earbuds on the market for the price and the best customer service anywhere, and it is a Tennessee company, and so we want to definitely support them. If you use offer code FLUID, FLUID, you get 33% off your purchase, which is an outstanding discount. So tweakedaudio.com, offer code FLUID. SimplyHerbals.net is Dr. Scott's website, and he's got his herbal nasal spray, which I thought I had some here. I need some today.
Mm-hmm.
It is fantastic, and it's relatively inexpensive. We've got rave reviews from people on it. And I'm 5 pounds away from my ideal body weight, thanks to Noom, which you've seen the ads for. If you want to try it out with me, go to noom.drsteve.com, noom.drsteve.com. You get 2 free weeks and 20% off. And it's unlike Weight Watchers. You don't have to do it forever. And it's less expensive than Weight Watchers in the first place. With the 20% discount, it's even less expensive. But you can try it for 2 weeks. There's no downside to it. Just give it a try. If you like it, you do it. It's really you only have to do it for 16 weeks. And then you're in maintenance phase. You can just, you know, do it yourself after that. And then the last thing I want to talk about is Freshly. We've been talking about Blue Apron, where, you know, they send you all the ingredients and you cut them up. And then we talked about Terrace Kitchen, where they cut all this stuff up for you, do all the prep. And then Freshly is just like, if you're really at the height of laziness, they just cook it for you. And they'll send it to you. It's never frozen. And you just pop it in the microwave. And it is delightful. It's all gluten-free, pretty healthy stuff. You can sort on their website by calories or by ingredients or by rating. And you can get $40 off freshly prepared meals that make eating right super easy. You get 6 dinners for $39 for 2 weeks. That's $20 off each week. Give it a try and let me know what you think. Freshly.drsteve.com. And, and I did have one other thing is premium.drsteve.com. If you want the archives of the show, you can go to premium.drsteve.com for $1.99. You get full access to every show we've ever done, including premium access and extra content. And if you use offer code FLUID there, you get 50% off the first 3 months. So it's $1 a month for 3 months. You just download everything and then just quit. I'm just doing that really not so much because we want to make money off of this, but to keep our mutual employer from digging too far deep into the archives, because we did some naughty things back in the day. We're not quite as naughty now as we were. So, all right. You guys got anything? Dr. X, you got anything on the medical horizon? Anything new?
Okay. Nope.
All right. So
don't take advice from some asshole on the radio.
All right. Very good. Oh, this is... one Dr. X may be able to weigh in on.
Who plays on Game of Thrones, the queen from Game of Thrones and Star Wars and everything else, apparently has had recently another brain aneurysm. It's either her second or third one. You know, looking at the pictures, reading the stories about it. What is a brain aneurysm, and what's the chances of surviving it? I mean, is it a blown out vessel in the brain or what? Thank you for that.
Yeah, Dr. X, you want to wax eloquent on that? It's something that you probably deal with in your business.
Sure. Aneurysms are kind of like if you've ever had a tube in a tire that kind of the sidewall is blown out and makes a large outpooching of the tire. The same thing.
You know, this is why I like this guy. That's exactly the analogy that I use on this show.
Yeah.
You got a fibrous outer layer and an elastic inner layer, and when that fibrous outer layer splits, it'll bloop out the inner layer. Just like, yeah. And see, you're old enough to remember bicycle tires that had inner tubes. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so when that elastic inner layer pooches out like that, it no longer has that strength of that fibrous or radial tire around it, and it can blow open and start to bleed. And the brain the skull is a finite volume, and when you start putting extraneous stuff in there, like blood pumping out, it creates pressure, and pressure on the brain is not good. You can die almost immediately from those.
Yeah.
The risk, you know, they do surgery on those and clip them. They also do some radiologic procedures. Well, they will put coils and basically foam into them to cause them to coagulate and isolate them from the vascular tree. But they can be extremely dangerous and deadly.
This woman is incredibly lucky. I'm just reading her account of what happened. She was at the gym, and she had excruciating pain, a thunderclap headache. If you have the worst sudden onset of the worst headache you've ever had, that's an indication to get checked out. She said, like an elastic band just went snap in my head, an enormous amount of pressure suddenly, and then very, very quickly I realized I couldn't stand. And I couldn't walk, and in that moment, I knew I was being brain damaged. Amelia suffered a subarachnoid hemorrhage, or bleeding in the space that surrounds the brain. Miraculously, she was back to work on season 2 of Game of Thrones just 6 weeks later. Wow. And then 2 years after that, she was back in the hospital with another one. With the second one, there was a bit of my brain that actually died. If part of your brain doesn't get blood for a minute, it will just no longer work. That's true. It's called a stroke. And can you believe that? Did she survive two of these? Anyway, you know, if they see one on an MRI, like if you're having some weird symptoms and you get an MRI and they see one, they'll go in and try to fix it preemptively because they're, you know, arteries are under a really high pressure. And when you've got a, you know, this little saccule instead of a nice muscular artery, like Dr. X said, you're at risk for that thing just rupturing. So, and arterial blood, it's not like good. Venous blood. No. You know, the worst demise I ever witnessed when I was a medical student was somebody that had an aorta esophageal fistula. And so this person, when that thing ruptured, so is this person's aorta, there was a tumor in the esophagus, was eating through into the aorta. Now, the aorta, for those that don't know, the big major vein or the major artery that pumps blood from the heart to the rest of the body. So it goes into this big artery and then it starts splitting up and splitting up until, you know, you've got this huge surface area with capillaries and all that kind of stuff. But under that, in that area, it's under very high pressure. And so when this thing ate through, he just started pumping blood instead of, because fluid's going to go in the path of least resistance, instead of into the circulatory system out through the esophagus. And where's the path of least resistance at that point is out through your mouth. So he just basically stood up, opened his mouth, shot blood across the room, maybe four or five pumps, and then that was the end of it. Man. So it was horrible. Ugh. So, but that's just testament to how different arterial blood is. Most of the time when we cut ourselves, we don't see arterial blood. When you're doing surgery and all of a sudden you see pew, 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 you know, these spurts of blood hitting the ceiling, then, you know, you've hit something you didn't want to hit usually. So, all right.
Did it say what kind of...
So she's completely in the clear, putting all of her energy in getting her charity going and finishing Game of Thrones. So she's one very, very lucky woman.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Scott?
No, I was just wondering if she's got like one of the AVMs where she's got, you know, malformation of an arteries in her brain.
Yeah, I don't know. The thing is that when they went in to see the first one, why didn't they see the second one coming?
She's awful young to be having...
Yeah.
That kind of, unless she's got something congenital. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. We promised to do this phone call last show.
Oh, yeah.
This one that's coming up.
I have got a bit of a return to form question.
Thank you.
My pecker, around the base of my pecker. I've got some red bumpy guys around there. They're, I would say clustered, but not necessarily all around. They're on the left side, in case you were wondering, but a little painful, sensitive, I guess, you know, I'm noticing them now, and I haven't been with any ladies of the night, so maybe...
Well, that's your problem.
There you go.
Dirty whore? Is that what you're telling me?
I don't know what he's doing now. He's gotten distracted.
I put some peroxide on it. It's still there.
Yeah, no shit. Yeah, peroxide foams up, so you think it's doing something. It's really just mostly damaging tissue. Yeah. So, So at the base of the penis, he has some painful things, and they could just be ingrown hairs. Mm-hmm. It could be nothing more than that. What you'll find at the base and particularly on the scrotum are little white dots, and they look like they're little domes about the size of a head of a pin, maybe smaller, that look like they've got some white stuff in them. Those are Fordyce spots. Those are just ectopic, meaning not where they're supposed to be, oil glands, and some people have them all over the place. The other thing that you worry about is, you know, if it's a painful papule at the base of your penis, could it be HPV? So I would get this looked at.
Or fungus.
Yeah, well, yeah, could be, sure. Yeah, you can get tinea cruris. Yeah. That's, you know, a fungal infection of the grinds.
So this nut sack.
The pubic area. Yep, absolutely. There you go. So, So that could be. So I would just get that looked at. And if your primary care doesn't know what it is, a urologist will absolutely know what it is. So, all right. Oh, here's a good one.
Hey, Dr. Steve, question. Is iron lung, when they're in those capsules, of course they're doing what they do, but is that real? And also, living that long and doing that thing, you know, is it relevant? Is that, I don't know, it feels weird that they do it that way, because they see at the head of it that, I don't know, capsized, whatever.
What? No, I know what he's saying. So he's asking about iron lungs, and that was an old school type of ventilator, you know, for people with respiratory failure. If they couldn't breathe on their own, you could put them in a chamber, you know, their whole body in a chamber, and then seal off their neck and then apply negative pressure in there. And what that'll do is it'll expand the chest wall, which causes you to inhale. And for people with muscular diseases or other problems back in the day, that was the way that they could, you know, assist somebody with ventilation. Now what we do is, you know, Dr. X does this every day, shove a damn tube down their throat into their trachea and breathe for them directly. Now, people think and a lot of doctors think this, that the iron lung is not used anymore. Well, the iron lung isn't, but the plastic lung is. We have cuirass. It sounds like I'm making some horrible homophobic joke, but cuirass.
Yes.
And I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. Cuirass.
Cuirass sounds so much better.
I know.
Just keep saying that word.
It's C-U-I-R-A-S-S. So I don't know how the hell else you would pronounce it. So I've only ever seen it written. I've never heard anybody.
Cuirass.
Cuirass.
I'm thinking cuirass.
Like caress.
Like a caress.
Cuirass. Anyway, we still use those. And people with chronic respiratory failure who don't want to wear a BiPAP or a mask over their mouth, and they just need it temporarily or while they're sleeping, they'll put this thing on, and it's like a vest now. It doesn't cover your whole body anymore. And the vest will apply negative pressure to the chest wall and assist them with breathing. And the nice thing about it is you don't have to have something over your mouth, so you can talk to people. You can eat, you can drink, all this stuff that you can't do when you're intubated or have a BiPAP mask on. So,
stupid question.
No such thing. Well,
what's negative pressure?
Okay. So,
suction.
Suction is negative pressure. So if I'm pushing on your chest wall,
right?
Okay. Then that's positive pressure. If I'm somehow attaching my hands to your tits with super glue and then pulling toward me, that's negative pressure.
So you're pulling away.
So that's what I thought. Yeah. So how would this lung thing work?
Okay.
How does it?
Yeah, so when it applies negative pressure to the chest wall expands to fill up that pressure, right? And the only way it can do that is if you suck air in through your nose and mouth and expand your lungs.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Instead of like forcing air into your lungs, what they're doing is they're putting in a thing that's a vacuum that you're in. It's pulling your chest and stuff up. And as it pulls it up, then the air goes into your lungs.
That's right.
Because your lungs are passive.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, for your lungs to fill up, they have to create space. But the lungs don't do it. The ribs and the muscles, you know, the muscles.
And that's how you breathe normally.
Normally, yeah.
You don't have an air pump that pumps air into your lungs. What you do is you have muscles that expand your chest, the chest size. Mm-hmm. And then
you create that negative pressure.
And it creates negative pressure that then forces air in.
Yeah.
You know, when you breathe normally.
And also your diaphragm pushes down, also creating that negative pressure air in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So
I think a lot of people don't realize the lung's almost like a balloon that's collapsed.
Yeah.
And this balloon is collapsed in a space to get the air in there that you pull away the balloon instead of blowing it up. And that creates this vacuum, and air goes into it.
If you took a vacuum bottle and you put a balloon in it and had the neck of the balloon out into the air, okay, and you sealed it all the way around, and then you evacuated the air from that bottle, it would make the balloon expand, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what would happen to the volume of air in there would increase, because as it expands, it's going to suck the air in from the outside to, you know, to occupy that larger space. So what Dr. X said is 100% right. When your diaphragm contracts, it increases the functional size of your
the base of
your chest wall. Yeah. And when you do that, it's, you know, air has got to, now you can close your mouth and not allow it to happen. Then you've got negative pressure actually in the lungs. You know, you'll have decreased atmospheric pressure in the lungs if you increase the size of the lung but don't change the volume of air that's in the lung. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
The other side of that is people talk about a collapsed lung. Mm-hmm. If you put a hole in the chest wall and air can enter there, then the lung does not expand. Or if COPD patients will get emphysematous blebs and they will pop open.
Yep.
So then the air can escape out through the lung tissue, because the chest wall is just a, like you said, the vacuum bottle.
Right.
And the lungs are in there with nowhere else to go except to follow the chest wall out,
right.
unless there's a leak in the system,
a
breach
or fluid or air. Yeah,
so.
That's a great point. The lungs are not really attached to the chest wall; it's a potential space, and because fluid is non-compressible and there's just a layer of very thin fluid and these, you know, sort of slimy tissues punched up against each other, when you expand the other one's got to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's got nowhere to go. But as Dr. X said, if you have a gunshot or pierce your side or whatever,
break a rib and the rib sticks in there,
or if somebody does a shoddy job putting in a chest tube, then air from the outside will try to equilibrate that pressure and equalize that negative pressure from the outside. When you do that, now the lung's going to collapse.
Yeah.
So,
and that's not good.
All right. So we went around that one about 40 different ways around different elbows trying to get to the same place. I think hopefully it makes sense. That makes sense now, Lady Diagnosis?
Yes.
Does it really, or are you just saying it does?
No.
It still doesn't.
No. I'll ask later. You can explain with pictures.
Okay.
Hey, we can do it. We can do it.
Do this. Okay. Close your mouth and take a breath like you're going to take a breath through your mouth, but don't allow it to happen. So you're going like that. Okay, yeah, exactly. See? So you had negative pressure inside your lungs when you did that, because you were expanding the size of your lungs and you weren't allowing air in there. So the atmospheric pressure inside the lung decreased, right? So when it decreases inside there, if you had opened up your mouth, which is one of the few times we ask some woman on this show to actually open her mouth. I just kid. And to make a misogynistic joke, because it's 2019. But anyway, if you had opened your mouth, of course, what would happen is the air from the outside would rush in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does that,
that
clarify
helps.
It at all?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. So we still use these cure-ass ventilators for some people, particularly hospice patients who might have muscular weakness and having difficulty breathing, particularly when they're in bed. All right. Well, all right.
Any more questions?
Hey, Dr. Steve, I'm listening to you talk about artificial sweeteners, ketogenic diets, and I hear you say that the ketogenic diet is a good diet, but not that one. Can you tell me which one that one is?
Sure. We were talking about, look, if there was one diet that was right for all humans, we would know what it was. We wouldn't still be arguing about high carb, low carb, balanced diet, Mediterranean, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we're still arguing about it tells me that there's not one right answer. A properly done ketogenic diet can be successful for weight loss. It can help with reflux, gastroesophageal reflux and heartburn. And it may even, done properly, improve cholesterol and other parameters,
sure.
You know, metabolic syndrome type parameters, which is kind of counterintuitive. But it's only counterintuitive if you're eating like what I like to call the redneck ketogenic diet, which is where someone bought Atkins' book 10 years ago and then started passing down this knowledge like the Talmud from person to person, you know, oral history, until it gets to the point where it's the mayonnaise, steak, and bacon diet.
Yes.
Now, that is ketogenic. Mm-hmm. You will produce ketones, and you will lose weight, but you're losing weight on that because you're malnourished. And the Atkins' original diet was heavy in green leafy vegetables and lean animal protein and low in carbohydrates. So now no one can tell me that the Cobb salad that I had for lunch today is unhealthy. You know, I had it had lean turkey, a whole bunch of different vegetables, and some balsamic vinaigrette on it. Now, I challenge anyone, unless you're a vegan, to say that that's unhealthy. But that's a perfect ketogenic meal, you know. So the diet that we were talking about that I don't like for ketosis is just the all meat diet, because that's crazy, you know. That's devoid in so many minerals and vitamins and fiber and all this stuff. That's just not good for you, in my opinion.
So could they supplement that with vitamins?
They could. Yeah, sure. You could do the typical American thing, which mm-hmm. is just eat whatever the F you want to eat and then just take a pill and hope that you're making up the difference somehow. That's where the whole fish oil thing came from.
Right.
You know, they found that people who ate more fish were having less heart attacks. So our response was, well, let's put all these fish in a vat and render them down to their constituent oil mm-hmm. and then just take them as a pill,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, but yes, you could do that. But the thing I like about this Noom thing that I'm doing is it's not a diet. They introduce you to ketogenic diets, to Mediterranean diet, to paleo, all this stuff, and say you can do any of these, but you got to use some psychology to make sure that food doesn't take over your life. That's basically what Noom is about, you know, psychology. Anyway, all right?
Got it.
How do ketogenic diets work? Our bodies are, our ancestors were devoid, their environment was devoid of carbohydrates for the most part. If you think about it, before agriculture, they didn't have bread and they didn't have sugar and pasta and sweets and all this stuff. They might have some concentrated carbohydrates when berries were on the bush for a month in the fall, and that's assuming that they knew which ones they could eat.
Yep.
Which ones would kill them. They might strip, like if they're walking through a field and there's grasses gone to seed, you know, they might strip some of the seeds off and eat those. But you know, our environment was pretty devoid in carbohydrates, and so we developed the ability to rapidly store carbohydrates when we did encounter them, and store them very efficiently in a sort of polyglucose called glycogen. And that glycogen is just basically a starch that the body, you know, it's a polymer of glucose molecules. It's stored in the liver and in muscle tissue primarily. And it's quick energy. You can tap it whenever you need quick energy. And people who run marathons that hit the wall, they're running out of glycogen. So if you eat more carbs than you can store in glycogen, well, the body's going to, it loves carbohydrates, going to store those as fat. So when you go on a ketogenic diet, what you're doing is you're not storing any carbohydrates. So you're using up all your glycogen. You're going to use it all up. And then you're going to start, you have to burn fat for energy. There's nothing else. And the third thing that you could catabolize for energy is muscle tissue. And that's called starvation. And that's why you're taking in protein, so that it's protein sparing, in the sense that if you've got all those amino acids running around your bloodstream, you won't start eating up muscle tissue. Okay? So the old crazy liquid diets were high in carbohydrate and low in protein, and those people started catabolizing their muscle tissue, and some of them even got renal failure and died from it. Mm-hmm. So we've learned from our mistakes in the past, right, as far as crazy diets are concerned. All right. All right. Dang it.
Or you could just eat what you want and not eat tons of it.
Well, and coming from a skinny, tall, skinny woman, that's really, you know, a profound thing to say.
It's called portion control, isn't it, Lady Diagnosis?
Yes,
she eats one French fry.
Hey, I'm the same way.
Well, yeah. When you're skinny, too. Yeah. I can't eat just one French fry without help from something like Noom, because if I eat one, I'm just taking handfuls and cramming them in my stupid maw, my gaping maw.
Mindful eating, Dr. Steve.
I know. Yeah. Well, mindful that's one of the things they teach you.
Oh, is it really?
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. Cool. Absolutely.
Well, hell, I've been telling that shit for years.
Well, who listens?
He won't listen to us. No. Has to be the hot woman in his app.
Exactly.
What did you eat today, Dr. Steve?
You've been so naughty, Dr. Steve.
You bad boy.
I know. I don't want her to think I'm naughty, so that's why I don't eat a whole bag of Snickers anymore like I used to.
Hey, I want to know if you guys could guess my girth. My penis is about 6.7 inches. So you guys say that you could just tell by anything by dividing it by 3.14. Put it up on the radio. I'll be listening.
Okay, no, 100% wrong. What it was we were estimating our girth. And getting it wrong almost every single time. So, and the reason if you've got an inch, a penis, like if you've got a needle dick and your penis is an inch in diameter, it's going to be 3.1415 inches in circumference, right? Because it's pi times d. So the length is not germane. You could have a big, fat 2-inch cock, or you could have a real skinny 10-inch cock, so the length means nothing. It's the diameter. So if you tell us the diameter of your penis, well, I can tell you what the circumference is. And when you've got, you know, a 2-inch, and that's not that big, 2-inch diameter penis, it's going to be, well, let's ask Alexa. Alexa, what's 2 times pi?
2 times pi is 6.2832.
6.2 inches in circumference. You would never imagine that in a million years. I figured, you know, it'd be, you know, 3.5 inches, sure, or something like that. And this led us to a discussion about why it is that humans are adept at judging distance, but not at judging circumference. Mm-hmm. And it's because my hypothesis, Dr. X, was that there was no evolutionary benefit to us having a knack for determining circumference. You know,
unless you're going to cut down the tree.
Yeah, right. And then you've got technology, and at that point, evolution doesn't bother with us anymore.
The size of the lion's head looking at you doesn't really matter how big the circumference of the head.
It's the distance.
It's the fucking head, and how far is it from me?
How far is it away, and can I get to the tree?
That's right.
And you're modeling that in your head just automatically with this analog computer that's in there. But we're terrible at estimating probability, and we're terrible at estimating circumference. So that's why we needed, Archimedes, or whoever it was that figured out pi is, the ratio of the distance between the diameter and the circumference of a circle. Anyway, there you go. So if you call in and give us your diameter of your massive member, then we can tell you what the girth is. All right. One more, and then we'll get out of here. Well.
Dr. Steve, I got my vasectomy done a couple weeks ago, and everything seemed to have gone well. I've got to wait about 6 weeks and splooge about 20 times before I test my semen for sperm.
Right.
But I was wondering, my incision was just very small at the base of my penis, and some pornos I've seen in the past, I've seen like a 2-inch scar on the gentleman's scrotum. And I was just wondering, is that a vasectomy also? Are there different types of vasectomies, or is that something else
it's called
saw?
An implant.
Because there's no stitch on mine, and I was just curious about that. Thanks, buddy.
So did he say in
pornos.
Yeah, he's watching. Exactly. He's looking. He's examining these men's
God,
scrotums.
Nuts. He's got.
He's looking. I think really it's called close. A
minimally invasive surgery is what he's had.
Yeah.
Somebody a good surgeon with a small incision. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what these 2-inch scrotal incisions. Do you ever do any urology?
Yes, cases. I do anesthesia for them, and I'm not sure what it is on the scrotum.
I wonder if he's looking at the midline, the rafe or whatever it is. What's it called where the scrotum?
The rafe.
The rafe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's rafe.
The taint.
Well, no.
Taint line.
So, if you're an embryo and you don't know if you're a male or a female yet, you know, you're going to have these tissues that are separated, and if you're in a female, they're going to involute and remain separated
or invaginate.
Very good. Yes. Very good. Yes, they will invaginate and create a
vagina.
Vagina. I don't know how to pronounce anything.
But
if you're
pajama.
But if you're a male, you know, those things will knit together and make the scrotum.
Got a seam.
So the tissues of the scrotum are analogous to the labia of the female. So just like the prostate is analogous to the Skene's glands of a female. Hence, squirting. And we're going to hopefully be going on Joe Rogan in the future to talk about female ejaculation, because we have the science and we know, you know, people say, well, I believe. Don't make faith-based statements. There's science behind this. If you're interested in it, just go to drsteve.com and put in female ejaculation. You can read the article about it. Phew.
Better yet, just live the ejaculation.
That's right. Just enjoy it.
Be the ejaculation.
Thanks always go to Dr. Scott, Dr. X, and Lady Diagnosis. We can't forget Rob Sprantz, Bob Kelly, Greg Hughes, Anthony Cumia, Jim Norton, Travis Teff, Lewis Johnson, Paul Ofcharsky, Eric Nagel, Roland Campos, Sam Roberts, Pat Duffy, Dennis Falcone, Ron Bennington, and Fizz Watley, whose early support of the show never went unappreciated, nor does it to this day. Thanks to our listeners whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. Listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel, SiriusXM channel 103, Saturdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern, on demand, and other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. Go to our website at drsteve.com for schedules and podcasts and other crap. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine.